Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. For those of you out in the audience, we were discussing scheduling logistics up here, so I don't want anybody to get alarmed because we had a quorum in the room while we were doing that. Okay, today we have three bills up for public hearing, so I will open a public hearing now, and our first bill will be Senate Bill 180. Chris.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, all the three bills come from the Department of Revenue, and Senate Bill 180 pertains in part to the issue of consolidated returns. As you recall from yesterday, corporations that essentially work as one business are required at the federal level to file a consolidated return, and then Oregon, that's the starting point for Oregon. One nuance to that is that at the federal level, certain companies are not required to file as part of a consolidated return. These would be real estate investment trusts, regulated investment companies, those kinds of entities. And when they file Oregon, they're supposed to be included, but sometimes they won't be included in that consolidated return, again, because the starting point is the federal consolidated return, and federal law does not require those companies to be included. So it creates an opportunity for some tax planning where a corporation could create one of these entities, have it separate from the group, and it would escape taxation for Oregon purposes. And it would be, under current law, the State Department for Revenue would find these through audits. And if one of these investment companies was not created for economic purposes but only to avoid taxation, then it would be pulled back into the consolidated group.
Okay, and remind us again, a consolidated return is just a return that reflects all the businesses of an entity, correct?
Correct. It's the different companies that essentially comprise a single business entity.
Okay. All right. Do we have someone from Deborah? This is your maiden voyage before our committee, or maybe my memory is just short. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I believe you're correct. This is my first experience this session with this committee. Thank you very much. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue, and with me I have Katie Lawley, who's a program expert to keep me on track and correct me when I make mistakes on this complicated topic. As Chris explained, for Oregon purposes, corporations that are made up of more than one corporation start with the federal consolidated return, and if they're filing a federal consolidated return, they file a state consolidated return. He also mentioned that entities such as real estate investment trusts are not included in a federal consolidated return. So when we start with that as our starting point, we're leaving out real estate investment trusts, regulated investment companies, and a couple of other types of entities. So as he mentioned, that what we have seen in some of the states, including Oregon, is that a business can set up a separate entity, a real estate investment trust, transfer assets to the trust, such as mortgages, and then those are excluded from the consolidated return, and we have no authority to bring them back in except our general authority to make adjustments for transactions that really don't have an economic purpose. So that's the statute we have relied on to bring those corporations into a group and say you really didn't have a business motive in setting up that entity. This bill would provide that if a real estate investment trust, for example, is at least 80% owned by the corporation, then it would be included in the consolidated filing for Oregon. If you think about the purpose of a real estate investment trust under federal law, the idea of creating those in the first place was to allow small players to invest in the real estate market. People with not a lot of money could invest in those, similar to mutual funds, for example, and reap some returns from those investments. One of the requirements of a real estate investment trust is that it have at least 100 members. So what we have seen in some of these sham transactions is the corporation may own 99% of the value in a real estate investment trust. Employees of the corporation may make up the other 99 members, but they really aren't set up as intended under the federal law. So this, again, will provide that those entities are going to be pulled into the consolidated return and included in the group and the filing and be subject to Oregon tax. And I believe that's all I had to say, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to try to answer questions.
Okay, so they would be pulled into the return just for Oregon purposes, and is that any kind of a special burden for the corporation?
Madam Chair, the Real Estate Investment Trust should be filing separately for federal purposes, a separate return, because they're not included in the federal consolidated return. If they were to have income from Oregon sources, they should be filing with Oregon anyway.
As a separate entity.
I think in most of the situations we're talking about, they probably would argue that they're not subject to Oregon tax and would not be filing with Oregon. So they would need to be included in that consolidated return, and to the extent that is a burden to them, then yes, there would be some work to do that.
What do we get out of that? We just get the ability to have them right there instead of having to go do an audit? Is that what do we gain by this?
Madam Chair, it should decrease the work of our audit staff to review the returns, to consider whether or not these are really set up for an economic reason or whether it is simply to avoid tax. It also should more accurately reflect the activities of the business and more accurately reflect the income that's attributable to activities in Oregon. And that's probably one of the major points.
Why were they separated out in the first place?
Madam Chair, the Oregon uses single sales factor apportionment, as you heard yesterday, and by setting up a separate entity that's outside the state and transferring assets to that, those assets then are not considered in the apportionment formula, and the income that entity receives is deducted by the Oregon corporation. So that reduces the taxable income that ends up being apportioned to Oregon.
But, I mean, why were REITs separated from the consolidated return in the first place?
Madam Chair, at the federal level, they are filing separate returns. I mentioned that there's a requirement that there be at least 100 members in a real estate investment trust. Another requirement is that all of the income be distributed to those members. So the income realized by the real estate investment trust is passed out to the owners annually, and they pay the tax on that.
Okay. So they were deemed to be different enough to be separated.
Madam Chair, I believe that's right.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Number of questions. Because most of those REITs should be filing source income tax returns, how many tax returns do you think we're going to grab that should be filing source income that aren't and would be gobbled up by this new regulation?
Madam Chair.
Excuse me, just... If they're not filing now a source income, what makes you think they'll legitimately file? And how many do you think we're going to be grabbing?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, any thoughts?
Identify yourself, please.
For the record, Katie Lawley with the Oregon Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, Senator Telfer. No, I don't know how many returns. We can maybe estimate that. We can try to find that out. But what makes us think that they would legitimately file that way? Because it would actually have a tax impact, I believe, in most cases. If they were to file their own separate return for the reason that Deborah stated earlier, that they pay out all of their income in the form of dividends to their owners, if they were to file a separate return, their tax would be zero. Because they can subtract, they can deduct the dividends off of the out of their income, and so their taxable income therefore would be zero.
Let me rephrase the question then. If they're not filing right now, this is intended to grab those that are not filing, but they should be filing if in fact they're legitimate and they have source income. How many of these tax returns do you think are not being filed that should be filed with source income as their basis for filing?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I do not know the number.
I would guess it's probably an entity that has income.
Pardon me. Do you have another follow-up?
I do. I have another question.
Madam Chair, I don't want to interrupt the flow, but the good senator knows so much more than I do that she's used terms I'm not familiar with. So what is this? Could I just get somebody to clarify what a source income return is?
I'd be happy to do that, Senator Rosenbaum. If you are not a domestic of Oregon, you don't live here, you don't have situs here, as we talked last Monday on presence, but you have income source whose source is in is Oregon, other than dividends, interest, which are situs, taxed in the state you reside in, you have to file an Oregon tax return to report that income that's generated from the state of Oregon and the associated expenses against that income. So you pay tax to Oregon on the net taxable income.
Okay. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, if I could just follow up on that. Because the real estate investment trust is required to pass at least 90% of the income to the members, and they are the ones that are taxable on it, would it be correct that even if the real estate investment trust were correctly filing for Oregon, the income should be zero because it has all been passed out to the owners of that trust?
May I answer the...
We've got some role reversals.
Yeah. I guess my point there would be it depends. I mean, if it's a distribution of profits that have already been taxed, they would be being taxed again, such as a dividend or something. If, in fact, the owners, the investors, are the ones picking up the tax and it's a pass-through, then why bother having Oregon have it filed in Oregon then?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I think the point here is that in looking at the apportionment formula,
The grabber, yep.
By putting the assets into a real estate investment trust that is outside the state, those assets then are not included in Oregon's apportionment formula. And that means the corporation has used the laws around the real estate investment trust, as an example, to shift income outside of Oregon through what we see as a tax avoidance measure.
So I guess what I'm trying to get a handle on is kind of the cost benefit of this. You're going to look up an estimate of how many people will be grabbing, as Senator Telfer so delicately put it, and versus how much extra effort this is for company. I'm trying to get some kind of sense of cost benefit. Is this going to be a lot of work for everybody for a very small return, or is this going to be a reasonable amount of effort for a respectable return?
Madam Chair, I think maybe the question for a business might be whether it is less burdensome for them to file a return, including an 80% owned real estate investment trust, or for us to audit and try to determine whether that is actually established for economic reasons and not simply for tax avoidance. So their audit costs may actually decrease because they're simply going to be in the consolidated return and we're not going to be in there challenging the legitimacy of the entity.
And are other states doing a similar thing?
Do we know this?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm told that most other states use combined filing. They don't start with the consolidated federal return as Oregon does. In fact, I believe we're the only state that starts with the consolidated federal. Mm-hmm. So with the combined return, this isn't an issue for them.
And what's a combined return? Chris didn't tell us about this. Chris, I can't believe it.
Another PowerPoint. I hear it coming.
Put one together for you.
Do you want to answer that, Chris, or you decide who answers that?
Katie, please.
Madam Chair, a combined return is basically a corporate return that is filed by all unitary members of a group, of an affiliated group that are owned by 50% or more The standard is 50% or more, whereas the federal return, consolidated return standard is 80% owned or more.
So we do get combined returns. No, we don't get any.
We don't. And so, Madam Chair, the other states that do have a combined filing method could bring these entities in to the return, into their state return, because they just have to meet that 50% standard and also be a unitary member of the affiliated group, whereas Oregon has to start with the federal consolidated. We can't bring anybody else into that return.
You agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have unanimous agreement here. Any other questions? Senator Telfer.
One question. You said the cost benefit to the REIT would be the fact that they don't have to pay for audit expenses, because there will be considerable tax preparation fees in doing this. As one who does that preparation, I can tell you that they can be substantial. How many audits, how do you find somebody to audit, number one, and then how many audits do you think you have? Giving you an example, if I'm REIT up A, it's not like I have an annual audit, but I will now have an annual tax preparation fee, additional tax preparation fee, because it's a whole different tax return that I'll be preparing now.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, we do audit for the issue. I can't say that every business is going to be audited or examined, but we do look at the issue. And
So you must have something to, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but you must have something on the return to point you to an audit. So on their consolidated return, even though they're not filing their REITs, they disclose that they have them? Or, how do you even know?
Madam Chair, well, keep in mind that there is, there would be transactions that are related to the REIT, because they have moved an asset over there,
so
that there's interest generally being deducted on the corporate return that's paid to the REIT, for example.
Didn't just a follow-up. Follow-up. Perfectly fine. Because it was actually a good question. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that your response to the cost-benefit, meaning how much burden are we putting on taxpayers right now, is, and you said that would be balanced by the fact that they have more tax preparation fee but no audit expense. Well, my concern is there's very little audit expense that they're currently incurring, but now they would have a considerable increase in their tax preparation fees, because there's not a lot of auditing going on.
Madam Chair, Senator Telford, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I was interested in the cost benefit of how much return we're likely to see, in additional revenue from this. If there's any way you can, we're not going to move this bill today. It's only posted for a public hearing. But if we, if you can kind of give us a sense of, what kind of return we're likely to get, because that's a pretty key factor.
We'll look at that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 180. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 181.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 181 also pertains to consolidated returns. I guess that's part of the theme for the day. One note with consolidated returns, intercompany sales and expenses often wash out. They don't have an impact on taxable income. So within the consolidated group, the expenses of one company paid to another within the same group, those expenses are deductible for that group, the one company, and then the other company, the income is taxable. So when they file, part of the advantage of a consolidated return is that that's a wash. It doesn't affect taxable income. the bill... clarify certain actions that are to occur when one of the affiliates involved in the transaction is not part of the consolidated group. So there can be a situation where one of the companies is not part of the consolidated group, but they're affiliated, and you have a situation where the expenses get deducted, but the income from the affiliate is not included, because they would argue that they're not paying tax to Oregon. And so in that case, if they're not filing an Oregon return, there is some tax planning that can occur where that income, those offsets are out of balance, where the expenses are deducted, but the income, because it's out of state, is not taxed. So that's one part of the bill for those groups. The bill also does contain a credit in case that member of the affiliate group actually does file an Oregon tax return. And so what you've gone from a situation where you have this intercompany transfer being awash on the same return to kind of two returns. And so the expenses are deducted on the consolidated group return, and the income is reported by this affiliate, but they're filing an Oregon return and paying tax on that income. So the bill contains a credit in those situations. Mm-hmm. So there's this kind of bifurcation depending on the filing status of the affiliate group that's not filing as part of the consolidated return.
So the credit would go to the affiliate?
If they're filing an Oregon return, because the income is being taxed. But if the affiliate is not, that's where the tax planning can come.
And how does the credit get computed? Because if you've got a consolidated return, it's one thing, but how do you compute it when they are separate filings?
That's a good question.
Tax paid to other state.
Tax paid to other state?
I would imagine it's just a tax paid to the other state. There's a formula
right.
in Oregon mm-hmm. statute
to
on
determine
how to
that.
Calculate that.
Mm-hmm.
Tax paid to other state.
Mm-hmm. The amount of the credit, it's on page 2, lines 34 and 35.
The amount from which the credit
shall be derived,
shall be the greater of, I see.
Tax paid by the related member with respect to the portion of their income representing the intangible expense paid. So the bill makes a distinction between these affiliates, one that's filing an Oregon return and one that's not.
Okay. Have anything to add to that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. That was a wonderful explanation. The only thing that I would add is that this proposal is coming from the Multi-State Tax Commission. It's a uniform proposal developed by the commission. About 20 other states have a similar requirement to make an addition for interest expense, and in developing their uniform standards, they looked at those states and tried to model something that would conform with what was in existence in the other states. We do have a statute on the books now that authorizes us to make adjustments. That's ORS 314.295, and I've put a copy of that statute on the back of my materials, and it does provide us with authority to distribute a portion or allocate gross income, but we think this bill is clear and provides more specific authority in these particular examples to require an addition to income for this type of expense. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Senator Telfer.
You know, on the surface, I think it's a good idea. I mean, one of the rules of thumb is collect everything that's owed to you before you start trying to generate more revenue. The concern I would have is, and I don't have a problem with the constructive ownership with the aggregate rules, is it's the double taxation that may be incurred. If Oregon's entitled some tax, but they're filing in Idaho, and they're paying a tax on the same income in Idaho as well as Oregon, with the multi-state rules, are they able to take the credit in Idaho for tax they've paid in Oregon? So we're not double taxing, we're just shifting the state in which the tax is being paid.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, the purpose of the credit on page 2 is to minimize the possibility of the double taxation. And it's our understanding that on line 31, the taxpayer who's filing the Oregon return would claim the credit if in your example, the Idaho Corporation is paying tax on interest income to Idaho, and we are disallowing a deduction for that interest expense, there would be a credit available on the Oregon return.
Oh, follow-up. Thanks for that explanation, because I thought I had heard originally that if they were filing in Oregon, only in Oregon, they would get the credit. So what I guess I'm saying is that if you have somebody who's paying tax in Idaho and then they have to pay tax in Oregon, who's getting the credit? That was always there's always in that issue as to what state gets the credit. Depends on the reciprocity and things, but...
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, for the corporations, I believe it is the taxpayer in Oregon who is claiming the credit based on income taxed to the related member in the other state.
In the other state.
Yes.
So they would take a credit for tax paid in Idaho, not just tax paid in Oregon.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, okay. I believe that's correct.
You agree with that? Okay. All right. Other questions? Thank you very much. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 181. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 182.
Chris. Madam Chair, Senate Bill 182 adopts a uniform definition of financial organization and replaces two definitions that currently exist in statute. It would be effective for tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2009. And there is a piece that would apply to tax years that are subject to appeal or adjustment for certain of those entities. And I believe Deborah has a lot more.
Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Senate Bill 182 is proposed for a couple of reasons. One, there is an outdated definition in the statute of financial organizations that goes back to the time when those were taxed at a different tax rate. The other purpose is to adopt a uniform proposal of the Multi-State Tax Commission regarding the definition of financials. And here's where we find ourselves in a bit of a quandary. A year ago, when we were developing this proposal for the legislature, we thought it was a good proposal. What's happened in just the very recent weeks is that the Multi-State Tax Commission is taking another look at the definition of financials and the apportionment rules for financials. So we have, we think that there are a couple of choices. One would be to go ahead and ask for this legislation to move through the process and then come back to you when the final work of the MTC is done on this. Another option would be to not move forward with this at this time, continue with what we have in the current law, and come back to you when the Multi-State Tax Commission has finished its work, which may be in a couple of years.
A couple of years. And what would be lost if we go with the current? I mean, what would we gain by having this in the interim before the Multi-State Tax Commission changes it again?
Madam Chair, the recommendation from the program for administrative purposes is that you not go ahead with this at this time, that we keep the status quo and wait to see what develops. And another factor in it, of course, is the upheaval in the financial industry itself and what may be coming from federal regulations, how those might change, federal definitions may change. We know that there's a lot of flux with the financials themselves and their business entity, the way they're organized. So for administration and also for taxpayers, we think it's probably better to just leave it as it is and wait to see how that settles out and then come back with another proposal.
And would we have happy banks and credit unions if that were to be the case? I see a lot of smiles from the back of the room. Okay, thank you for your testimony. Any other questions from the committee?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We will close the hearing on Senate Bill 182, and that completes our agenda, committee. We are closing early for the first time, I think, since we started this. There is a possibility of a Friday meeting. I want to just put people on alert. If we do it, it would be at 1 or 1:30, but I won't know for sure about that until a little bit later, so people are on notice to look for a possible posting for Friday. Any other business? We are adjourned.